friends. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation, here at the Sam Nation Studios, deep behind the orange curtain, safely ensconced in an undisclosed location somewhere in Orange County. Now, friends, I know, look, this Jussie Smollett story, I just haven't gotten to the past few weeks or month and change. And frankly, it's because we've only had about three shows since the story broke. And by virtue of having 2 hours or less a week to go over everything else going on in the news, I did not get to it. But now I am clearing my desk, my show schedule, so to speak, here to address this because where do we begin? See, this story to me is a product of our time. It is a product of something bigger than Jussie Smollett and his failed salary negotiations with Empire and the producers of that show. I guess he was only making, what, $60K an episode? You know, when I first heard the story, I'm going to start at this from just the ground up, right? When I first heard the story and I heard that there might be whisperings that this was a ploy to get attention to himself and perhaps get some leverage for salary negotiation, I thought, well, this, I don't watch the program, first of all. I had no idea how big or how small, how prominent or not his character was. But so I kind of was thinking, because I'd never heard of the guy, I didn't know him. He's not a household name. There's some famous actors on this show. He's just not one of them. So I thought, you know, maybe this is a guy who's a poor guy. He's getting paid like, you know, $5,000-$6K, you know, an episode or something. Look, $60,000 an episode is pretty damn good. I remember, just in perspective, remember House, House MD, right, that show? Oh, okay, what's the actor's name, the showrunner? Yeah, Hugh Laurie. So it, when the show was in its heyday, and I understand that was a decade ago, but I mean that was that he was making like $300K an episode. So $60,000 for a clearly not an A-lister is really good. So we'll start with the fact that this thing here is a function of what is he in his mid-30s? Is he a millennial? Kind of. You go through his Twitter account, a lot of pompousness, a lot of, one might say, deep, big thoughts, wise thoughts for somebody in their mid to early 30s. So you already got the impression this guy was out to be a martyr. This guy was out to be known. And his mother, I think, just a little bit of background, his mother was formerly of the Black Panthers. So there's some social activism, if you will, runs in his family. And as so many, what, he's 36? Okay. So as many young people, I'm 38, I understand it. As many young people around me, I see this, where they feel they have to measure up, right? They feel that they have to, their parents have done great things. They're growing up. They need to find a voice. They need to find a place. But are frustrated when no one is listening. Now, here is the disconnect. When I say this is a product of our time, the story is a product of our era right now. What happens is that we have become less focused on substance and overwhelmingly obsessed with image and style. And you had a guy who was on Twitter and he was a fairly well-known in certain circles. Certain people that followed the show, they knew of him. And he was frustrated. He wasn't getting any traction, right? He wasn't becoming a voice of the generation, as I guess people think they want to be at 36. And so coupled with this need to draw some attention to himself and become a cause celeb, he decides to go and do this, what's been in the news, right? And yes, this thing stunk from the beginning. It was weird. So this guy is wandering all by himself, 2 a.m. in the morning, freezing cold outside. I mean, it's freezing here in Orange County. So, I mean, think about New York, Chicago. This is sometime during the polar vortex. This guy's wandering out 1-2 in the morning. And two guys, big time Trump supporters wearing MAGA hats, who have purchased a noose and bleach and ski masks. And they are familiar enough with the show Empire to identify this actor, know that he is an anti-Trump guy, know that he is gay, and single him out for an attack. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying as the facts were coming out, it seemed to me a little odd. You have to understand from a legal point of view that what the police did yesterday in that press conference is somewhat unprecedented. And what I mean by this is there was a, if you missed it, we've got a clip from it. The press conference yesterday that the Chicago Police Department did was a step-by-step takedown of this entire thing. There was no language in there that was alleged, you know, suspicion of. It was, the language was clear, concise, deliberate, and laid out exactly what Jussie Smollett had done. When this type of thing happens, when you have police go on the record like this, they know that they've got a solid case. They know that they have everything that they need to button this thing up. And when you couple with it the racial undertones of all of this, and I think a very desperate hope and dream on the left side of the political aisle, which certainly the political establishment of Chicago is and belongs to have this thing not be a hoax speaks to just how big of a hoax it was. Listen here to Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson opening yesterday the press conference with these words.
I come to you not only as the superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, but also as a black man who spent his entire life living in the city of Chicago. I know the racial divide that exists here. I know how hard it's been for our city and our nation to come together. This announcement today recognizes that Empire actor Jussie Smollett took advantage of the pain and anger of racism to promote his career. Why would anyone, especially an African-American man, use the symbolism of a noose to make false accusations? How could someone look at the hatred and suffering associated with that symbol and see an opportunity to manipulate that symbol to further his own public profile? To make things worse, the accusations within this phony attack received national attention for weeks. Celebrities, news commentators, and even presidential candidates weighed in on something that was choreographed by an actor.
News commentators and even presidential candidates weighed in on something that was choreographed by an actor. And by the way, this Jussie Smollett guy is so freaking stupid that he wrote a check to one of the two Nigerian brothers that he paid for the attack. I don't wonder what he put in the check memo. Hey, here a $3,400 to my man. Hate crime hoax. Assuming that Jussie Smollett is a man of average intelligence, the laziness with which he progressed through this terrible plan and scheme belies his arrogance in thinking that he would get away with it. And the arrogance comes not just from his own stupidity, but comes from a lazy and inept media and a political culture that promotes victims, that doesn't, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about victims not being believed, that believes every victim, Christine Blasey Ford, right? Believes every victim who comes forward, makes an accusation, and wants to promote a narrative that they already have formed. They, the news media, right? They, the political establishment, already has formed in their minds. And to them, Jussie Smollett must have thought, hey, I'm going to bring something that they're going to run with because they need me. They need the story. And that is really, that's what we ought to be talking about. We ought to be talking about the climate that makes a guy like this think that he can be sloppy in planning something like this, because he thinks, for, and he's got reason to believe, that no serious questions will be asked of him. Now, the fact that we're already talking about how he needs to get a lenient sentence and he needs to be let off, you know, that he's a troubled young man. And I mean, troubled young, he's 36 years old. I mean, we are putting Paul Manafort in jail about lying to the FBI and tax fraud. And this guy wastes hundreds, thousands of hours of Chicago PD time, of resources, of FBI time. And they're already talking about him getting off. That is part of the story as well. So there's a guy, John McWhorter. He wrote a piece in The Atlantic, obviously left wing. What's that? McWhorter. Yeah, The Atlantic wrote a great piece. And in it, he describes this phenomena of cloaking yourself in these trials and tribulations of racism and being a racist victim as being part of victimhood chic. That's his word. I like the word because I like the expression. I think it's absolutely right. I think there's this, we're in a full stage right now where what was his thinking in getting this would help us with salary negotiations. The thinking is, as a victim of a hate crime, my profile is raised. I will get to have a greater voice. I will be more prominent. I will drive viewership to the program, to the show that they're on, the Empire show. I will be more valuable to the producers and to HBO and everybody else involved. And this type of thinking actually is not entirely wrong. I've heard this, you know, I think the left has finally discovered supply side economics. Because what we really have, right, everybody's talking about hate crimes going up. Hate crimes are going up. And there's a statistic out there that's being advanced and pushed by the Southern Poverty Law Center that's saying hate crimes under Trump are up something like 20%. But it's misleading, right? Because there are far more offices since 2016, law enforcement entities that are reporting crimes that previously weren't reported as hate crimes. There's something like over 1,000 more reporting agencies. So you got to understand that there's more volume of data going into it. But the other part of this is that the Southern Poverty Law Center is attributing all sorts of things. Like, you know, if you've got a pro-Trump group that's saying that we don't want illegal immigrants in the country, they're being labeled as a hate group, right? They're being labeled as being lumped into the same grouping as a guy like Dylann Roof, if you'll remember, who shot up a church in South Carolina and clearly a racially motivated attack. So this kind of thing, we've got to get a grip on it. And what I mean by supply side economics, my quip about that is this: that there is a greater demand for racism in this country right now from the left than there is a supply of it. The left is so desperate to advance their narrative that Trump is a bigot and that Trump is creating this age of basically putting us back in the Stone Age on civil rights and all this hate and they want manifest proof of it. And along comes a bozo like Jussie Smollett, and voila presto, they buy it hook, line, and sinker and talk about it ad nauseum. No criticism, no critical thought. Nothing. And that's the problem. That's the problem. And to that end, you know, anybody that wants to tell me that society created Jussie Smollett, well, yeah, arguably. But it's not the society, it's not the unjust society that the left is celebrating. It's the victimhood-obsessed culture that the left elevates and uses to achieve their political means. More on this when we come back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation. Stay tuned.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rojofsky, okay, just to give you an illustrative example of why the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, is bananas. You know, they've got a hate list or a hate tracker, you know, and they put people on this list and groups on this list that they believe or think advance bigotry and other sort of stereotypical racial religious violence. They've got Ayaan Hirsi Ali. If you know who she is, right? She's the now Dutch citizen, was born, raised in Somalia, suffered female genital mutilation, and as a consequence of that, has become an outspoken critic of Islam as a born and raised Muslim. And they've got her on there as an anti-Muslim extremist. I've read her books. I mean, she has a strong opinion, but none of it is hate. It's an intellectual takedown of some of the horrible practices that faith does. And it is what it is. Look, these people are bananas, and they have a list. I just was going through it during the break. This giant list of quote unquote anti-immigrant groups, and they're all political. Most of them are political action committees that are giving money to pro-border control candidates. So we're not talking about, you know, skinheads that are lopping anyone who looks like they might be an immigrant over the head with a kosh. These are legitimate political groups that are giving money to things like building the wall. So this is absolutely bananas. As late as Sunday, a week ago, right, Sunday, beginning of this week, right, the press conference where they laid everything out was on Thursday. But on Sunday, police had already released the two brothers, the two Nigerian brothers who had been suspects in the attack, publicly reclassified them from suspects to cooperating witnesses, had already put them in front of a grand jury, cleared them of all charges, and had leaked out through a variety of sources that the investigation had turned a corner. MSNBC was still peddling this horse crap. Listen to, who is this? Former federal prosecutor Paul Butler speaking with David Gura. And you can smell the desperation on this, in this, and how they're still continuing to cling to the story. Go ahead.
Jussie's story has been consistent from the beginning. It's the police who have shifting accounts.
He maintains it is.
On Friday, yeah, they said that they have probable cause to believe that these two men had committed the crime, and now apparently they don't. You know, as a former law enforcement officer, I think that we're probably never going to know exactly what happens. Mm. So since there's a lot that we don't know, let's focus on what we do know.
Sure.
One is that victims should be respected and trusted and honored. The other is that, as you say, hate crimes have gone up, according to the FBI, 20% increase in the first year of the Trump administration.
Yeah. Well, let's take this apart. First of all, I understand victims ought to be listened to and all this, but at this point, the Jussie Smollett isn't the only victim in this, okay? These two brothers are a victim. They've been wrongly accused of something. We've completely forgotten that. We're still talking about this in terms of there being one victim. The guy who wanted to make himself a victim. The self-appointed victim. But there are real victims in this. If you're one of the 12 people that pay taxes in Chicago, just kidding. Well, look, no, I mean, if you pay taxes in the city and the state of Illinois, and your resources, your tax dollars were wasted, you're a victim. A legitimate victim. So don't give me this crap about we need to believe victims. Can you imagine where they're saying, well, law enforcement gets it wrong, you know, think statements gets it wrong. Where was this type of, I don't know, where was this kind of skepticism when it came to listening to Blasey Ford make her wild accusations against Brett Kavanaugh? Where was this type of leeway in listening to Brett Kavanaugh's vehement denials? These same clowns on MSNBC, when they heard Brett Kavanaugh profess his innocence with tears in his eyes, speaking, by the way, FYI, speaking under oath, all poo-pooed it. They all said, what an actor, what a stunt, what a joke, To me, MSNBC and their cohorts in the mainstream media, these people are so morally decrepit, I have no words to describe it. And then the final point on this, what I'll say, is them cloaking then the argument, saying, listen, with this all, we need to understand this all in the context of this 20% rise in hate crimes. It's actually 17%, but doesn't matter. This rise since 2016. Now, what happened in 2016? We elected Trump. So obviously that's, you know, correlation proves causation. We all learned that in statistics. Wrong. But anyway, so we've got that. And wait for it here. This is the same type of reasoning, as terribly flawed as it is, that we heard following O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson, guilty, it doesn't matter. This rights the wrong of years of LAPD mistreatment of the black community. In other words, he murdered his wife. Who cares? Murdered another guy. Doesn't matter. To me, this is about the injustice of the LAPD over years and years. And so the truth of OJ, the truth of Jussie Smollett, the truth in these circumstances, what happened in Ferguson, hands up, don't shoot. The truth of it doesn't matter because the myth, the legend, the absurd faith in the provably, demonstrably false reality that's being promoted takes precedence over all. And that, my friends, is not the country that we are. Certainly not the country that we should be. All right, Sam Rojofsky back after this. I get it. Yeah, I'm going to get into all the election scuttlebutt. California in the news. That's some good stuff. I love our state. I love living here. I love being surrounded by kooks. All right, Sam Rojofsky back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation, making radio great again here on the Sam Nation podcast. You are in the right spot listening to radio magic. All right. Sanders, Harris, others enter the race, and Mediaite reports that Donald Trump, according to the bookies, you know, the people that put their money where their mouth is, Trump is a massive odds-on favorite for 2020. Now, I could tell you this without reading the article. And let's just kind of step away from this, because this is going to be a really fun season moving forward. I don't know about you. I am extremely excited about where this all goes. And I want to point out one very important thing, which is we were told First, we were told, right, that Trump was going to drop out. I mean, he wasn't even going to try to go for re-election. Trump didn't even want to be president. Do you remember that? He didn't even want to. He looked so shocked when the results came in for Florida and he realized he actually might be president. He was just standing there and you could tell. I mean, I love this. Journalists were saying you could tell he was going, oh, crap. What is this? I didn't think this was possible. And then after, you know, the dust settled on that and it became clear Trump actually wanted to be president, then we were told that, well, certainly he was just going to turn this thing over to Pence. He's going to get bored. He's going to want to go back to real estate development, blah, blah, blah. And I told you again, this is not Trump. This is not who he is as a man. It's not who this is the press following a caricature that they themselves have created. And then the third tier to this, well, we'll call it a hoax since that's what we're talking about topically. this hoax went out there that Trump was going to get primaried. That there were going to be serious primary challenges. And this, I think, happens when the mainstream media, when leftist reporters at the New York Times and the Washington Post, when their only friend is Bill Kristol, and that, who, you know, by the way, is the most virulent, you know, anti-Trump, denizen of the anti-Trump conservative movement. It's very lonely out there, starting to get very lonely. Anyway, so according to, you know, Kristol, Trump's going to get primaried. He's going to do all these things. It's all not happening. The most interesting part of the story right now is not who's running on the Democratic side. It's that on the Republican side, there's no contenders, no real contenders. There's no money. There's no movement. There's not a name. And the only thing out there that even remotely resembles a Republican challenge to Trump is this coffee guy, Mr. Starbucks, who's entered the race and he's entering as an independent. Yeah, and the Democrats are schwitzing. Do you know why? Because he will be a center-right candidate. Schultz is not a left-wing guy. In fact, he's branding himself deliberately to the right of whatever Democrat runs. You know that in the Democratic primaries, the fringe left weirdos are going to come out full force, you know, beating their AOC drums and pans and other kitchenwares. And they're going to come out and they're all for Bernie. Bernie announced. Got 6 million in 24 hours. It's so funny. Democrats don't like to pay taxes, but they sure like to give money to political campaigns when the candidates, promise to give them a lot of stuff paid for with other people's money. Very easy to part with your cash in those circumstances. So anyway, to me, the really interesting thing right now is that all that has been predicted thus far, Hillary will win. Trump will lose. Trump will quit. Trump will get impeached. Trump will, get primaried. All this stuff. Trump won't run for re-election even. None of it is happening. So please, dear goodness, explain to me why you're still listening to these false prophets. You've got to find religion and tell your friends about this program because oddly enough, in 2 hours a week, I'm giving you a greater scoop on things and a better view of political realities than any of these other overpaid bozos are. Anyway, all right, I'll take apart a few of these Democratic candidates when we come back because who the Democrats think is going to win against Trump is so wrong. They're so lost. All right, Sam Rogowski back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
I am not going to mention names. I won't mention names. I was aghast. Look, aghast. When I found out that a friend of mine, who I value him and his wife so much, they are phenomenal people and do so many great things in the community. And that is all I am going to do to describe them, because they are known entities here in Southern California. I was aghast when on Instagram, on my private, you know, Instagram, their private Instagram, I noticed that they had held a fundraiser for Kamala Harris. I know. I said to Sherry, I go, what the? There are some more qualified? Are there some more qualified candidates? Here, speaking of Kamala Harris, right? The Jussie Smollett deal. She immediately jumps on this bandwagon and tweets out a tweet of support. And I'm giving this to you as an example of her political competence, right? This is, you want to play your cards right on this, right? You don't want to be the first to jump in. You want to say something. And most importantly, it's better if what your remarks are, if they're less tangible, if they're spoken instead of written. And she puts a post up, tweets it out, it gets saved, and she deletes it. Here's a Fox reporter asking Harris about the Jussie Smollett deal. Well, just after she wrote, this is what Kamala Harris wrote on Twitter, January 29th, one day after the story broke. Jussie Smollett is one of the kindest, most gentle human beings I know. I'm praying for his quick recovery. This was an attempted modern day lynching. No one should have to fear for their life because of their sexuality or color of their skin. We must confront this hate. Here is Ms. Harris responding to a question about this particular tweet.
Which tweet? What tweet?
About saying that it is a modern day lynching that.
Sorry.
Yes. Jussie Smollett.
Okay, so I will say this about that case. I think that the facts are still unfolding, and I'm very concerned.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned too. I'm concerned for your good judgment. Like all of you, if your Democratic friends are getting on the Kamala Harris train, the high speed rail to nowhere is, I think, a good metaphor for the chances of her candidacy. I'm blown away. And look, she may be a likable person and all this stuff, but she doesn't have. Can you imagine her debating Trump? Trump will eat her alive. She's a child compared to him. I know there's an age gap, right? But I'm saying her political, answering this question, it could have been so easy. You know how you answer that question if you know what you're doing? You say, well, the facts I had, it was abhorrent. It was horrible. And I reacted. I reacted as any normal person would, especially since I'm a person of color myself. And I happen to know Jussie, and so I trusted him. I had faith in him. And now I have some doubts. I'm going to wait for the police investigation to run its course. Next question. That is what a smart person does. An idiot looks left, looks right. I mean, I know she just admitted that she had smoked marijuana in the past. I think she'd smoked marijuana before this interview. Freaking high as a kite. That's the only explanation for this kind of political malpractice. The only thing that Kamala Harris will have going for, of course, is the media. The media were going to help her along. So who are our other candidates? Who are our other runners? Okay. We got Bernie Sanders. I'm telling you, Bernie could have won against Trump in 2016. I do not believe Bernie Sanders can win against Trump in 2020. And the reason for that is very simple. Trump is going to run on a strong economy, and Bernie's going to run on completely changing that economy up and reconfiguring it. And people are benefiting from the strong economy. Those people are going to vote, and they're just not going to risk on for an unknown. In 2016, these same voters broke for an unknown, namely Donald Trump. Hillary was a known entity, right? She was a known deal. She would have been 4 more years of Barack Obama, more or less. But they broke for Trump because they wanted something different. The economy, contrary to how many times Barack Obama wants to take credit for it, was not good. After 8 years of taking a literal dump on business and on commerce in America, going after the wealthy, vilifying the wealthy, vilifying Las Vegas conventions and our business and everything, top to bottom, inserting race into every story. At 8 years of that of Obama, and our country was not in a good place economically. And anyone on the front lines of that as a wage earning American knew it. Being told otherwise was a lie. It was the emperor's new clothes, and everybody knew it. Everybody was standing there going, geez, I don't think this economy is doing that great. But, you know, I guess I'm going to go along because I can't criticize the black guy who's in office. Or thereabouts is the script. So now Trump is running as the known. And as a known, warts and all, he's delivering a good economy. So who else? Okay. Give me a quick break here, and I'll tell you a few more names and round out this game of who might win. Sam Rogowski, back after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, one thing I have to say is I give zero credence to polling at this point. You'll remember back around this time when Trump was being floated as a potential candidate for 2016... I mean, around the same time in the election cycle, right? Early before 2016, year and a half out or so before the election, polling less than 1%, about 1%. So what I see here, look, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, they are what they are. Cory Booker is in the running, as you know. Spartacus himself, he's not going anywhere. Elizabeth Warren is dead on arrival. If you're betting on that pony, I mean, you are betting on a three-legged, knock-kneed somnambulist, all right? That's what you got there, politically speaking. Her viability is, I'm not going to compare it to a late-term abortion in Virginia, but that's about as viable as that candidacy is. Joe Biden is an interesting one. And in my opinion, Biden is the strongest candidate to face off against Trump, if there is one, on the Democratic side. But hear me out. In South Carolina, the polling as of last week or so, I had Joe Biden in a sizable lead. But, well, he hasn't announced yet. And Biden was the odds-on favorite to replace Obama. And he chickened out for whatever reasons, and those same reasons might exist today. And they might be his family's not in for a race. He's not feeling up to it. You need a lot of energy. What Biden has, he'll have that folksiness, right, that easy demeanor to challenge Trump's way with words and way with leveling his opponents. So Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Beto, whatever his name is, O'Rourke in Texas, say these are all nobodies, and they would all get decimated by Trump. And I think you know, Biden's one who could stand up on stage and do it. Now there's probably names out there, people who are lying in wait who haven't announced yet. And I think Bloomberg is one who, now how many independents can we have, right? I think Bloomberg would go and apply or run in the race, throw in his hat as a Democrat. He would go in as a Democratic candidate. But again, I don't think that the Democratic primaries would select him, especially as primary voters tend to be more extreme members of their party. And the Democratic Party and what's left of it right now is very left wing. The face of it are these Ocasio-Cortez type characters with Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer and Chuck Schumer holding on for dear life as the party's been hijacked by loonies. And so I don't necessarily see, I don't know, I don't see an opening there that is as clear, that would is as clear for Joe Biden and is as clear as for a more moderate candidate like Bloomberg to suddenly make a make a break for it here in the, you know, in the early stages of voting in the Democratic primaries, closed primaries, where the party loyalists are the ones voting. Is Hillary Clinton going to run? No. If, oh, dear goodness. Yes, of course. I want her to run. I want her to run and watch watch her trip and fall. Can I say that? It's that's another deal that's dead on arrival. And she has no political allies. Remember that. She has no political allies. Eric Holder, that's another name out there that's been floated as a possible contender. Yeah, Biden's going to run on Obama's coattails. Obama's got a good brand. Obama would go out and campaign for Biden. But we're still back to the same problem. They're running against Trump, fine, but they're also running against a strong economy. And on that note, I do here at the top of the next hour, let's talk about that, because it's actually the issues that the Democrats are running against all the wrong issues. And from a politically strategic perspective, they are sacrificing territory where they don't need to be. I will explain this together with some updates on California when we come back. Sam Rogowski on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, fighting dilatory obfuscation and other acts of idiocy. Every Friday here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, welcome to the podcast. All right. For some time now, I have been telling you that the Democrats are fighting the wrong fight when it comes to Trump. The Democrats are convinced in their minds of the irrefutable truth and rightness, justification of their own positions, that they are willing to sacrifice and, well, first of all, suspend all disbelief, remove all logic, and commit whatever bad acts in the advancement of stopping Trump. And it's going to backfire. Now, I'll give you example number one being the wall. When I was in Washington and Ben introduced me to some gals over at some left wing party that we went to as his Trump supporting brother-in-law, mouths opened and these really wonderful ladies said to me, one of them said to me, "Can you tell me one thing about the president that you like?" And I said, "I like that he supports the wall. And I think if I can give you any bit of advice, I think that the Democratic Party is going to lose on this argument." And I thought that they were going to literally drop dead in front of me. I mean, they were so blown away by it. Well, what do you mean? And I gave them the example I believe I shared with you many weeks ago, is that I had been talking on a vacation in Barbados. I've been talking, it's anecdotal, but I've had these types of conversations multiple times. So I'll give you one example And this being the example that I shared at this particular party, I said, look, I was talking to a lady who is a generational Democrat. She lives in New York City. She likes Trump because of immigration. Why? Well, her parents were Holocaust survivors that had to come to this country, and they had to wait in a line. And those are her quotes, not mine. They had to wait in a line. What's wrong with waiting in a line? She's not anti-immigrant. This lady, sir, I'm not. And most of the people out there who want a strong, impermeable border are not anti-immigrant. And phrasing the entire debate around that lie only serves to distort the position, right, of the president that everybody else understands viscerally is not his position. Trump is not anti-immigrant because the people that desire a strong border are not anti-immigrant. They want to know who's coming into this country because they understand the fairness. And how many times have I said this on this program? They understand the fairness of waiting your turn, of everybody getting in, but in the order that they apply. I give you the Disneyland example. You've heard me say this. If I've said it once, I've said it 100 times. You know, nobody wants to wait for 40 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour and a half for some dumb ride at Disneyland only to have some jerk cut in front of you. Try doing that at Disneyland. See what happens. Now, people are going to eat you alive. Those people are not anti-human. They're not jerks. They just believe in fair play. So there's a fair play argument here. And now there's an added element. There's a safety element. Trump is correct in framing this around a safety element. And he's correct to do it because not only is it a good argument to make, but it also triggers the left to go bananas. When you bring up examples of illegal immigrants coming into this country and committing felonies, murder, rape, right, kidnapping, attempted murder, assault, right, all of this stuff, and you bring that up, I mean, the left goes bananas. What are you doing? You calling immigrants racist? You calling them murderers and rapists? And that was what 2016, I say this is very 2016, right? This is passe. If you remember, Trump called Mexicans racists, Mexicans rapists, right? That was what he said. Well, it was not what he said, but that is what he said according to so many of my friends on Instagram and on Twitter and people that I think are otherwise somewhat normal, but somehow fell for this thing. It became a talking point propagated by a willing media. Now, this inherently is the poison pill, right, that is part of this Democratic platform. The Democrats have positioned themselves as anti-wall. They are now all in on this message, and we've got 15 states that are suing Trump to block his use of emergency funding to build the full wall, right? So this right now, in their minds, they are all in. This is, if they're playing poker, they've just taken all their chips and everything. They put it right in the middle of the table. They're all in on this topic. And they think it's a winning argument. The problem is, if they listen to this program, and if they had any modicum of common sense, they would know it's not. And now for the first time, there is evidence of what I've been saying all along coming out. Zogby, the pollster that is not necessarily, again, known for being a pro-Trump guy, far from it, released one of his Zogby Analytics polls recently. And it found that that Trump has made enormous gains among suburban women. Suburban women that left Trump, right, that didn't vote for Trump back in 2016. Now are shifting over to him. Now, the poll didn't stop there. It wanted to know why and on what issues. These women do not like his tweeting. These women do not like him grabbing, talking about grabbing women by their hoo-haws. Okay? These women do not like a lot of things about Trump. But these women do like his position on the wall. These women are very okay with his emergency proclamation and the use of emergency funds to fund the building of a strong border. And there's proof of it. Now, I tend to discount polling when it goes against my intuition. Sometimes I'm wrong. But when polling confirms an intuition that I have, I tend to believe it more. Does that make sense? Is that a fair position to take? So I'm not surprised that suburban women, aka moms, don't like the idea of having bad actors in our country. And this is not to say that every illegal immigrant is here to be a bad actor. But it is to say that nearly every bad actor illegal immigrant could have been prevented from being here and therefore acting badly, like murdering people or raping women or whatnot, could have been prevented from being here had we had a more or less impenetrable southern border. And that's the part of the argument. See, this is not nuanced. This is not something like an economic question of bailing out banks and too big to fail. And I think a lot of Americans, that just is over their heads and they don't understand economics and because they're too busy learning about Eskimos and deforestation in college. But, you know, well, yeah, I mean, that's what college is about these days. So they go into it. They go, I don't know why we should have saved GM. Yeah, that was a good idea. Yeah, it was a good job, Obama. But they do understand the principle of a closed border and the result that it would have. Now, there's another little wrinkle to this. Trump's support with minorities has gone up because minorities as a whole don't like illegal immigration either. Right? If you're poor and a person of color struggling to find employment and you're on the front line and you see it in your neighborhood more than I do in mine, you see new people showing up every week, every month, every year. And they're willing to work under the table for pennies. You know, they're willing to take cash and do menial work for less. They're taking your jobs from you. You don't like that. So I get it that Maxine Waters' district in South Central LA loves Maxine. And for some unknown reason to me, reelects her every 2 years. Even though she lives in a posh house way outside of the district and doesn't give a rat's rear end about any of those people. But I know something about that area, and I know that that area is doing better under Trump. And I can tell you something else, having a conversation this week with a close friend of mine who grew up in the inner city as a poor guy. And he absolutely confirms what I always know instinctively. People don't want to be on welfare. People don't want to take food stamps. People have pride. The color of their skin doesn't matter. Hill of beans. It's not in our nature as humans to be dependent. And so in an economy that has raised black unemployment and black employment, excuse me, to record levels, where employment of women and other minority groups up and away. And with so many of these groups, I think quietly, if they're not saying it publicly, they're not okay with unfettered illegal immigration. And Trump, I wish people would give him some credit, because writing Trump off as a dummy is the most idiotic move you could make as a Democrat running in 2020, for sure. Because what Trump has done by staking out his extreme position on the wall, build a 30-foot wall, make it go sky high, have it be beautiful and big. You know, what they're hearing in their minds is big, giant middle finger to, you know, to any person trying to find opportunity in this country. But by Trump pushing that so prominently and unapologetically, it's making the left stake out this insane open borders agenda. Kamala Harris, you know, Cory Booker, Beto O'Rourke, all these dummies are all out there. You heard Gavin Newsom, right? He may be throwing his hat in the ring. Gavin Newsom, our idiotic governor here in California. You see, what does he want? An open border. And anybody that comes in here is automatically given sanctuary. It doesn't. They're actually, these people are advocating tearing down existing fencing that was approved, expenditures that were approved by previous Democratic administrations and previous Democratic members of Congress. The border wall and the border fence is going to be a big issue in 2020, but is not a winning issue for Democrats. It is not. And at the very least, if I have to absolutely take it down to the bare basics of it and really discount some of my surety in this, I will say this. It's certainly not the rallying issue that the Democrats think it is for their cause. It is at best for them a 50-50 issue. But they are acting like it's a 90-10 issue. They're acting like they are so absolutely in the right on this that, only racists, skinheads, you know, bigots, and conservative radio talk show hosts like the idea of a wall. And the truth in the numbers is it's not happening. So this Zogby poll is, I believe, one of the many that will come out as we get closer to the election that show that people really support this. And Trump forcing the issue and forcing the conversation. You know, if the Democrats wanted, I told you I was going to give them some advice, didn't I? I said here, I'm going to give them some advice. Drop the lawsuits. Let Trump have his emergency funding. Okay. And let the wall be built. And just run against it, but with it having been basically a fait accompli. That's the strategy, because you don't want the fight for the wall and their refusal to give it to Trump be a watershed issue during the campaign itself, because it may end up being a referendum on the wall. And the same way that the political establishment woke up shell-shocked a few years ago in England to what? You people really want Brexit? Wow, we had no idea. Hell's bells. And 2 years ago, people go, what was that? They voted for Trump. They might be surprised. I'm telling you, a lot of people are not publicly admitting they want a wall, and they want it. They don't want illegal immigration. They want people to follow the law. And you can call them undocumented whatsy-whoosies. It doesn't matter. You call them whatever you want and call the wall whatever you want. If it's a matter of semantics, as it so often is with Democrats, it doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, people understand this issue, and it's such a stupid fight to die over. But they won't listen to me. I'll explain all that later. I'll get to this. I know why they're not. Yeah, I know why they're not listening. Sam Rzhovsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
I don't know if you know this lady. Pose actress India Moore went viral earlier this week. She wrote on February 17th. And I quote, this is, I'm just putting this out there. If you've got children in the car, maybe just put me on a brief mute here. All right, are we good? All right. Well, so she wrote February 17th, quote, if a woman has a penis, her penis is a biologically female penis. Now, I would literally feature this in a pro-Trump 2020 ad. I would feature this prominently. This is the Democratic Party of 2019. We are the yeah, I can see it now. We are the party of biologically female penises. I mean, I'll tell you what, these are, yeah, for one, isn't this gender appropriation, right? I mean, we talk about, and I don't mean to step into a trap here, but if it's wrong for a white man to apply blackface and appropriate the gender, I'm not talking, by the way, there's two types of blackface here, right? We're talking about people who are doing, obviously, racial stereotyping, and then there is the costume of a star or somebody that you admire, right? You can't, if there's a particular black performer that I really love and I look up to, I can't show up at a party in blackface in 2019. No way, because if at the very best case scenario, it's racial appropriation, racial identity appropriation. So this, I think, is gender appropriation. And I also, you know, perhaps if we're so against and vilify climate change deniers, I wonder where all the science, gender science deniers are going to end up on this. it's just insanity. And it's one more example of how this is not a good look for the left, because I know it's on the left. It's a race to be as fringe and as extreme and as cray. That's, by the way, short for crazy. If you're not familiar with modern terminology, and with crazy, nutty things that the left is doing just to get attention. And I want to say that I think this is a symptom of the era of Trump. And what I mean about this is, look, if you take the wall, for example, and a normal position would be, all right, maybe 2,300 miles of border wall is insane, but we need to put it at least 1,500 miles. We got to narrow the corridors where people are crossing to a place where we can manage it with manpower and that type of thing. So Trump's position, if it's on a scale of 8, and the reasonable position is a 5, right, middle of the road 5. Well, the Democratic Party and some, they're going into the negatives, right? They are so keen to be exactly opposite of Trump that they're negative 8, right? And they've missed an opportunity to take a more measured middle of the road position that would gain voters. So on trans issues, I remember in the 2016 race, it was a hot topic, and I thought, you know, Trump's retort to this was so good when it came up in a debate. He said, what have we been doing with bathrooms? Haven't we just sort of figured this thing out? I mean, do we really need comprehensive legislation on a federal level to address this problem? I mean, let's let the states figure it out. Let's let individual counties figure it out, and let's treat trans people fairly and properly. Let's be good, decent human beings. But then Trump's position gets mischaracterized as him basically telling him trans people shouldn't go to the bathroom at all, and should just wait to go to the bathroom until they're at home. Or I don't know. I don't even. It's so crazy. And then. So the opposite end of it then is India Moore saying, coming out with a whole new definition of human biology. It's not a winning position. So those are, if I could say, the hard facts. Sam Rzhovsky back right after this break.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Majowski, Sam Nation, making radio great again here from our undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. Lara Logan, a CBS correspondent, made waves these past few days. Formerly with CBS, yeah, she got the boot. But anyway, she was doing a podcast and talking about her experience in the media, and she basically came out swinging. And I think this is very interesting. Here are her original remarks. And I know this clip here has a little bit of a buzzing sound to it. We couldn't do any better than what we have here. So forgive us. But what she's saying is extremely spot on and important. Listen carefully.
If I want to find the truth, it's got nothing to do with whether I like Trump or don't like Trump, right? Or whether I believe him or don't believe in him. That is not a popular way to work in the media today. Because although the media has always been, historically, always been left-leaning, we've abandoned our pretense, or at least the effort, to be objective today. The former executive editor of the New York Times has a book coming out, Jill Abramson, and she says we would do, I don't know, dozens of stories about Trump every single day, and every single one of them was negative. She said, we have become the anti-Trump paper of record. Well, that's not our job. That's a political position. That means we've become political activists, in a sense, and some could argue propagandists, right? Mm-hmm. And there's some merit to that.
Of course there's merit to that. And of course, it's not where you want to be if you intend to be an independent journalistic voice. Now, I will actually venture to say this, however, that as privately held companies, the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, are free to do what they want to do. And I think that in the era of Trump, there's money in being anti-Trump. They're doing better financially than they have for a long time. And it's because, in my opinion, it's because they are the voice of the anti-Trump movement. But we're all free to call them out for being liars. And none of us should operate under the assumption, the illusion, or the belief that these people are journalists. They're just opinion writers. And if you see a negative headline in the New York Times about Trump, no, it's coming from this position. It's coming. There's an editorial level decision to be anti-Trump. And it's a financial decision, as much as it is an ideological one, in my opinion. Now, there's a big backlash to Lara Logan. She ended up going on Fox News, Hannity. Here she is on Wednesday. I thought this was pretty interesting.
If there are any independent voices out there, if there are any journalists who are not beating the same drum and giving the same talking points, then we pay the price. And if they can't, you know what's interesting, Sean? They can't take down the substance of what you're saying, right? They can't go after the things that matter. So they smear you personally. They go after your integrity. They go after your reputation. And they'll stop at nothing. And I'm just, like, I'm done, right? I'm tired of it. They don't get to write my story anymore. They don't get to speak for me.
That's it. And that actually is where I think the system backfires on them, because I think that a newspaper like the New York Times could have dissenting voices in there, and that dissenting voices actually would drive a certain amount of credibility, would restore credibility to the newspaper, also drive a certain amount of debate that is healthy to enrage and recapture the anti-Trump audience. And so I think that if you're to believe this type of retribution happening to any independent voices inside the anti-Trump media, that they're being acted against, right? That they're being silenced, then that should lead you to believe that it's less economics playing into it and more ideology. And that in their blind pursuit of being ideologically pure, ideologically focused, there's you know, profit be damned. I think these are two different reads of the situation. But certainly in the era of Trump, opposition to Trump, the ends justify the means. And what happened at Berkeley, I think, really sums that up nicely. We'll talk about that next. Sam Rogowski on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. All right, in Berkeley a few days ago, Hayden Williams was attacked. He had a sign up for his conservative group called Turning Point USA. The sign was referencing the Jussie Smollett case. The sign read, quote, "Hate crime hoaxes hurt real victims." Now, two guys come up to his stand and start yelling at him. They push him. He's filming the encounter using his cell phone. They knock it out of their hands, and then there's kind of a pushing back. The perpetrators push him. The guy, Hayden Williams, pushes back a little bit, and then he ends up getting sucker punched by an unknown man that the police in Berkeley are looking for. Now, here's the audio of the confrontation, just to kind of get a taste for how scary this must have been.
Can you explain what you're doing?
I'm gonna video this.
You're not videoing me.
All right, well, we're in public, so I'm just going to video it for my own safety because you seem really erratic.
You are encouraging violence.
No, I'm not.
I don't give you a videotaping. You're a punk.
That's him knocking his cell phone to the ground. Now he picks it up.
My face, mother.
And he walks back up to him. And then gets punched.
I'll shoot your ass.
All of those words, by the way, none of those were uttered by the Hayden Williams guy, except for the beginning where he's telling him, "I'm free to videotape you. We're in a public place." By the way, the law supports that. So, you know, you can't demand that somebody not videotape you if you're in public. that's a non-starter. So here's to how to read this. The anti-Trump left thinks it's okay to punch people in the face as long as they're the ones that are right. If somebody's wearing a Trump hat, they're right. You know, when this Jussie Smollett case broke, I've got this guy that cuts my hair who I have known since I was, I don't know, he did my mom's hair in high school. I've known him a long time. He's known me since I was in my teens, and I've known him since he was in his 20s. And we're friends. I love Theo, and he's gay, and we don't always agree on everything politically. But the end of the long and the short of it is when this Jussie Smollett deal came out, he was talking about it. I was getting my hair done, you know, I was getting my coiffed, and yeah, well, you know, one has to look good on the radio. So I was doing my part in that. So we were talking and, you know, he was just and understandably up in arms about this case. And, you know, I said, I don't know. I don't know. And I said, well, I think what we have here is a tale of two cities, if you will. I think that we've got, this is what I told him. I said, I think we've got this Jussie Smollett case. And on the other hand, we've got these Covington kids. If you remember Covington High School, they went to the National Mall, they show up in Trump hats. And the assumption was made right from the beginning that Jussie Smollett was a victim. And the assumption was made that the Navajo windtalker Indian dude that was beating his drum was the victim in the Covington confrontation. And the assumption in both deals was that Trump, of course, and all Trump-affiliated persons are automatically not good actors, not acting correctly. And so I had to ask my friend, who again is a liberal and as a gay man, I had to ask him. I said, look, you think it's right to hit somebody because they're wearing a MAGA hat? And the obvious answer, which, you know, I give him credit for, is he's a decent man. I said, no, of course, never right to hit anybody. And that is the right approach to this. I told him, I hate to break it to you, but there is political violence, hateful violence perpetrated on the left by the left against people on the right simply because of their political beliefs. And it's being justified because my political beliefs, I can't speak for everybody else's. I said, I'm going to tell you this honestly, Theo, my political beliefs are being mischaracterized as hateful and as racist and everything when nothing could be further from the truth. When you know me, you know who I am, you know my heart, and you know that's not who I am. And I think we have to have more of these types of dialogues with our friends on the left, because God knows these types of incidents are alarmingly common. And it's interesting because here's a smart guy. And I asked him, did you see the whole video? There's a whole video of the Covington confrontation. It's out there. And it's not the story that was put out by them. It's not the soundbite that the media ran with for 2 weeks. And he says, no, I haven't seen it. I go, there's a lot more to it. And I think that your understanding of what occurred there is wrong. And let's, you know, wait to see on Jussie Smollett and see how that turns out. And so I'll see during my next haircut how that conversation goes. All right, Sam Rachofsky back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rachofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
The Chi-Coms, the Chinese Communist Party, are back in the saddle and aggressively pursuing their new social credit system. I don't mean back in the saddle. They're just absolutely determined to get this thing built. And yeah, I've explained to you before what this is, right? Think of this like Experian or Equifax credit company, but controlled by the government, very sophisticated, unlimited funds. And it doesn't just look at your activities that would indicate how good you are with money, which is what Experian and Equifax do, but it'll look at other things. It'll look at the kind of posts you put on social media. It has artificial intelligence, AI, that goes through your social media and determines, you know, what type of stories you post, what positions you take. And if you are not toting the Communist Party line, you get points deducted. And if your score falls below a certain level, you end up unable to buy airfare, unable to buy train tickets, unable to apply for credit. I mean, you're actually blacklisted. It's not like you have bad credit. You actually are prohibited from very essential, elements of life that would require you to be successful. So this is extremely onerous. Now, there's a new app on the Apple Store. It's also out on Android, but there's a new President Xi adoration app. Have you heard about this? The Chinese are right now urged to download this app where you get daily doses of wisdom from President Xi, who they're building up into a new cult-like status. He now has unlimited terms. He's going to be there forever. And they're really building him up as the next Mao. And it's hilarious. So people have to be on this app and you get points. You get points on this app for the quizzes that you complete. So people are doing it just so they can get promotions at work, just so they are seen as being socially reliable. Of course, it feeds into the social credit system, and it's extremely alarming. Now, I thought this story was interesting because at the same time, our very own communist here back at home, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, is taking a swing at the credit companies. You see, she's launched an attack at Equifax for their credit scoring. And this on the heels of some reports that may or may not be accurate, that Ocasio-Cortez has a credit score herself in the 400s. Look, if it's true, it's pretty rich irony that she sits on the Financial Services Committee. can it happen? Is that the question? I don't know. I don't know if I believe it. I'll tell you, back in law school, first year of law school, it was really tough for us. I had to stop working, and a decision was made. I'm making that very passive. I decided I wasn't going to pay my mortgage for a year, like 13 months. And my credit didn't get that low. Amazingly enough, right? With a series of very severe lates. And then eventually it all gets worked out and done, and my credit is fine now. And but I'll say this, a very worthy investment. I got current with the bank. I did everything right. I ponied up a lot of money to get out of that. But, you know, you do what you need to do to sometimes to advance yourself forward. So I don't know about this Ocasio-Cortez report, but just because Snopes says it isn't true doesn't mean it isn't true. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she needs to investigate China. This seems way more abusive than some credit breach over at Equifax. So I don't know. Hey, that's a show. That's the music. That's the old Kane coming, you know, from behind the curtain and pulling me by the neck off stage. So have a great weekend. Love you all. Wonderful to have you here. Sam Nation, at Sam Nation on Twitter, at Sam Nation on Instagram. Get the podcast to your friends. Listenership is up through the roof. It's exciting. See you next week. Keep on rolling.